Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to Wrestling Talk 102, episode 1 of season 1. It's actually episode 1B, since, like I said, I actually learned that there's a time limit on Anchor of 60 minutes, and for the WrestleMania Night 1 review, I was almost 50 minutes in. So I didn't want to cut an episode off, so I decided to do a second one, and who knows, we might need a third. I got a lot of wrestling to cover here today, guys. Okay, we are in WrestleMania week, just to, to give you a little idea of where I left off. I did, of course, cover WrestleMania Night 1, so we're going to jump into WrestleMania Night 2. I guess WrestleMania Night 1, I could give it an overall score. 7.3 out of 10. If I'm going to do it on a stars rating like Meltzer, I'm going to go 3.75 stars. I think that's fair. Bianca and Sasha definitely did a lot of that for me, and also Cesaro and Rollins. So that's going to be my review of the first one and the rating that I give it. All right, let's jump right into night two here, though. Enough talking. I got me in trouble last time. enough going off a tangent here. Okay, so we opened up with Ashlyn Kraft performing America the Beautiful. It was really cool with a live crowd. And she was all right. They say she's the next hottest country singer. And I don't know. I've never heard of her. I am starting to get a little bit more into country, though. So maybe she'll be big. And this will be one of the things that started her off. After her, we had Titus O'Neil and Hulk Hogan show up to, again, nail down the fact that they're the hosts of WrestleMania, and this time they are dressed as pirates, making a lot of stupid jokes. Hogan, not to my surprise, got booed a lot when he spoke, and Titus got cheered. Like I was saying in episode 1A, I think the Hogan ship has sailed. I think it's time to move on from Hulk Hogan. Leave the memories alone. That's all I'm going to say there. Titus is Titus still. Just doesn't really do anything for me. I'm sure he's a great guy. He comes off as a great guy. He's just no one that I really care to see on my TV taking up time. So from there, we jumped right into what Titus said was a horror story. Bray Wyatt, the Fiend, versus Randy Orton. Now, I feel like they should have done what they did last year instead with Bray Wyatt. And that was like the cinematic match. They called it the Firefly Funhouse match, I believe, or Street Fight, or whatever it was last year. Sorry about that. I had an ad. Probably brought to you by Anchor. excuse me. Randy Orton walking down the ramp, made fun of Mandy Rose's slip. A little comical. He took forever, too. He just reminded me of 2009 Randy Orton. Holy smokes. It was weird. And then the Fiend came out. Well, I guess Alexa came out first with the big, Jack in the Box, or Fiend in the Box, whatever you want to call it. And she turned the crank. But before that, they showed the Fiend walking down, I guess it was a hallway or something, and he was burned at first, and then some pyro struck, and he came out, and he was back to his old garb. So that was kind of a cool visual. But then once he popped out of the Jack in the Box, I mean, that was pretty cool too, I think. He proceeded to jump on Randy Orton, give him a nice clothesline off of the top of the Jack in the Box. So that was a fun little start. Randy Orton had some sick WrestleMania white trunks, though. I always dig when Orton switches it up from like the black and all that stuff that he's normally known for. I want to say back in, I think the first time I ever saw something like that happen with him, maybe was like SummerSlam 04. I want to say that he maybe wore blue. I can't really recall the exact color, but I remember thinking it was pretty cool that he switched it up. This was just there. The Fiend did his no-selling early on. Orton did manage to get in some offense, and then Fiend would find ways to stop him. Towards the end of the match, the Fiend went for Sister Abigail, only for fire to go off, and then Alexa Bliss is sitting on top of the Jack in the Box with black ooze running down her face as if she was distracting the Fiend, which she ultimately did. He started walking towards her with his hand stretched out, or with his arm stretched out, I should say, and then turned around right into an RKO, and literally one RKO finished off the Fiend. So that was a little different. And then after the match, after Orton left, Alexa and the Fiend were, I guess the Fiend was just staring at her, and then the lights went out, they came back on, and they were both gone. So I don't really know how to think about what we all witnessed there and what they're going to be doing. I mean, I kind of know now the way they're going because I watched Raw. But at this point, watching it, you have no idea what's going on. You think and you're hoping maybe they'll do something later on in the show as well. But, you know, spoiler, we never got that. So, that's going to get, man, it was so short. It was less than 6 minutes long. Such a waste of Randy Orton at WrestleMania. The Fiend has, in his WrestleMania, his two WrestleManias now, I think he's been in, hasn't really done a whole lot of note. Last year, the Firefly Funhouse match, that's so hard to say, was not up to par with the Boneyard match, as I'm sure everyone agreed. So, you know, I was hoping we'd get something good here. And who knows? Maybe they're just making the Fiend or Bray Wyatt more human. Like, maybe when he got burned, he lost some of his, you know, no-selling ability, the ability to take however many curb stomps he was taking from Rollins in that Hell in a Cell. You never know. Never really know with Vince what he's moving towards here. So, anyway, let's go on to the next thing here. Bayley went back and interrupted Bischoff and Hogan and Titus. And again, Bayley should be used better. That's all I can say. Bischoff put over Bianca and Sasha, though. And I guess irritated Bayley, saying that he wanted Bianca on his podcast. So then I guess they just left, and that was the end of that. Going forward, we went to the... I don't know if I rated that Fiend-Randy Orton match. I'm going to give it a star and a half out of 5 stars, just because I really don't know what happened in that, and I feel like it was just a giant waste of time. But anyway, let's go on to the Women's Tag Team Championship match. Nia Jax and Shayna Baszler defending against Natalya and Tamina. Now, imagine you're booking your WrestleMania Women's Tag Team title match. And you honestly think that having Tamina on both nights of WrestleMania is a good idea. I don't know how that like registers and even like makes it past the decision makers in WWE. But then I think to all of our surprise, and maybe it was just a joke. I mean, it could have been, you know, totally just for shits and giggles. But Florida started 2 Tamina chants, not 1, but 2 Tamina chants during that match. And I was just like, oh my good Lord. Like what is this? Like what is her thought process here? But you know, WrestleMania crowds are known to be pretty smarky, and so yeah, we got what we got. I don't think that the outcome was ever in doubt. Nia and Shayna were going to retain. At this point, I don't know who's going to knock them off. But I want to know who looked at this match on paper, though, and thought, this match should get 15 minutes. This match got 15 minutes, guys. And all I can say to that is, wow. Hopefully they don't screw some other people out of time. And that's what I was thinking at the time. But the next match was one of the matches I got less time that we definitely should have gotten a lot more time out of. As far as that match went, gosh, I'll give it a star. They were there. I think Nia and Shayna deserved a lot better. And, you know, I respect Natty and Tamina. They've both been around almost the same amount of time in WWE. I think Tamina might be like a few years after her, or maybe like a year and a half after, from when she debuted with the Usos. I believe it was in 2010, either 2009 or 2010. I just don't find either being built up enough to warrant them being on WrestleMania. And they had to do this build up totally on the fly over the last like 3 weeks, because they had to get as many people on the WrestleMania nights or the WrestleMania cards that they could. I respect what they can do. I just, you know, they give us just no reason to care about Natty and Tamina, though. So let's go on to the next match, which was Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Now, how long ago? This we're talking maybe 5 years ago now, almost 5 years ago when Sami got called up after Kevin had gotten called up in 2015. Almost 5 years ago, this was a match that you wanted. We clamored for this match. And I don't think it ever lived up to the hype that we wanted. We got the great, fantastic match in NXT at a TakeOver event. And then Kevin Owens just kind of started going to the main roster because, let's face it, Kevin Owens kicks ass. But this one, God, it's 5 years too late for me. Whatever the hell they're trying to do with Sami Zayn, it's not working for me. This whole conspiracy victim thing, like, you know, going off of Chris Jericho's famous conspiracy victim angle that he had back in the late 90s. It just, they're trying to rehash old shit. And it just doesn't work for me. But it is the first time a takeover match is run back at WrestleMania. So they have that going for them. I mean, they went right at it at the very beginning. We got some, you know, some cool throwback moves like a Michinoku driver that Michael Cole's dumbass called a Blue Thunder Bomb. You know, these two guys know each other so well. They can have a good match. You know, they can have at least a 3-star match in their sleep. It didn't have the story, though, that it needed at all. This match had really nothing going for it. And then they got to throw in the celebrity dude, Paul or whatever. I don't pay attention to those YouTube celebrities. There was no reason for him to be there. Logan Paul, I think was his name. Logan Paul. He had zero reason to be on that show, other than the fact that he actually took one hell of a stunner bump. And the crowd loved it. They were booing that dude anyway. No one wanted to see him there, but to his credit, he did take one hell of a bump on the stunner. Let's see. Kevin Owens, of course, won. Sammy was never going to win this match. But, you know, they are both great wrestlers. And I give it they only got 9 minutes. It's so hard for me to give anything over like 3.5 or 3.75 stars. If it's under 10 minutes. So I'm going to go 3.25 stars on this out of 5 and call that good. Could have been so much more. If they would have given them an extra 5-6 minutes, who knows, that would have probably broken 4 stars. So anyway, let's go on from there. Of course we know that that Logan Paul got stunned. And then onto the comic relief of the show, which my wife didn't get it first, because she's only been watching wrestling now, like religiously with me, since we've been together, which has been since 2014. And it was Matt Riddle, trying to sell the Great Khali on one of his goofy ideas. Now the wife knows who Great Khali is. So she thought, you know, that beginning part was funny. And then Rob Van Dam came in, and she really didn't know who he was. And I'm just laughing because just the sight of Rob Van Dam and Matt Riddle on the same screen, like the two guys at WWE's like, hey, these guys are like stoners. Just them being on the same screen with the Great Khali, I don't know. It just it made me laugh for a few minutes. And then Rob Van Dam saying they just needed good branding, like his RVD's rolling papers and handing papers to Riddle and Great Khali. No, that was classic. Congrats to Rob Van Dam on his deserving entry into the Hall of Fame, and I can't really say the same for Great Khali other than the fact that he's getting in on comedy and for being probably the biggest star in India for a long time. I don't know if gender ever really passed him on that front. But, you know, they wanted to put him in the Hall, and, you know, congrats to him as well. But not for the same reason as, you know, Rob Van Dam. So, anyway, from there, Riddle rides his little scooter down to the ring to take on Sheamus and defend his United States title. The thing about Matt Riddle is I don't think that he was ever supposed to really win the U.S. title. I think they got backed into a corner when Keith Lee got injured, and because it was supposed to be a triple threat, correct? I think it was supposed to be Riddle, Bobby Lashley, and Keith Lee in a triple threat. Lee goes out, so then they have to fill that last spot, and they put Morrison in. And Morrison wasn't built up at all during that, other than winning that pre-show match to get in that match. There was no way Morrison was going to win it, and they had to get the title off of Lashley so he could go win the WWE title. So it went to Riddle. And I'm surprised he held it so long. There were a couple of guys that probably could have taken it off of him. Ali was one of them, or Mustafa Ali, because that's what he likes to be called. Not Mustafa, Mustafa. You know, I thought that would have been a good thing to do. But, I mean, he had a fun little, month and a half run with this title. His comedy sketches are usually, you know, they're fun to chuckle at. Sometimes they're a little stupid. I mean, actually, they're all stupid, but I mean, it is what it is, and we know what we're getting with Riddle. I just think the guys just kind of rubbed management and everyone there in WWE kind of the wrong way, especially with his excessive poking of guys like Goldberg and Brock Lesnar. Just not the best way to get people to like you in the company. So hopefully he can figure his shit out here in the next year or so. He needs a major reset, though. He should be one of the most badass guys on the roster, but they just want to make him this comedy guy. And I get it. It's World Wrestling Entertainment. I understand that. But, I mean, the guy is uber talented and needs to be, I feel like needs to be treated as such. I think the right call was definitely made here in Sheamus winning the match. That sick bro kick out of the Acai moonsault, is I think what I'd call it. That was awesome. And he straight busted up Riddle's lip, with it. So, you know, I think Sheamus was the right call in this instance to get the U.S. title. He's been one of the MVPs of Raw for the past, you know, 3-4 months. Had some good battles with Keith Lee, with McIntyre, with Lashley. Yeah, give him the secondary title. Awesome. The match went just under 11 minutes. I have no problem giving that one about 3.25 stars as well. I think they went out there and did their thing, and would have benefited from probably another 5 minutes as well. I just want to see these secondary titles treated as a bigger deal, though. I'm sick of these titles getting passed around and all this stuff. They need to stay on something for a long time, like they were with Lashley. I feel like Lashley carried it forever. But yeah, we need dominant champions in these divisions, and not just to pass them back and forth between guys. So yeah, 3.25 stars on that one as well. And again, Sheamus is the new United States champion. Thank God. They had an ad run with Triple H and Bad Bunny plugging Bad Bunny's tour for next year. Triple H pretty much says in the ad, "You were awesome at WrestleMania," which he was. I said that on episode 1A, and And but then he said, now it's time for you to go do what you do best. And sure, I don't listen to Bad Bunny's music. I don't speak, you know, a lick of, you know, of Spanish or anything. So I couldn't even get into it, to be honest with you. I've tried, but I mean, still props to him for what he did at WrestleMania, at the Rumble, and the stuff that he's done on Raw. He's done what not many of these celebrities can do, and that's come in and have a prolonged feud. So good for him. From there, we went to what shouldn't have never been called this in the first place, but it was an Intercontinental Championship Nigerian drum fight, which was Big E versus Apollo Crews, a.k.a. the new Black Panther. Wale played Big E to the ring, which is cool, but everyone knows that when you get played to the ring, you usually lose. But then again, in this match, no one really knew the rules coming into this. But we look around, we see kendo sticks, drums. There's a big ass gong there. Like it was just, I was just like, what is this? Like, what are they doing? But they started pretty hot. I mean, they both went after the kendo sticks and Apollo and Big E beat the shit out of each other. They only got a little under 7 minutes. And Big E got his spear, through the ropes spot on, which is awesome. And then, you know, Big E, I believe he did hit the big ending, but then, God damn it, they brought back this Baba Tunde, Daba Kato, whoever the fuck this guy is, and he comes in, and what was it, with one choke slam, I think is what he did, a choke slam. It put down Big E. Like, no way. So, anyway, Apollo Crews wins the Intercontinental title, and now he's apparently got this, like, disciple and Indaba Kato, because it's the best thing they could think of for him is to be someone's, be some African dude's disciple, I guess, some Nigerian guy. But whatever. I mean, this just did not start off well, this show. And it was, I mean, I feel like it was doomed from the very start, from the pirate outfits and then Orton and the Fiend. Oh my God. This match could have been a lot better though. And it should have been longer. Like, they gave Big E in his hometown with a special entrance under 7 minutes in his match. I'm sorry I'm laughing so much, but this, it just kills me. Two and a half stars out of five. Sorry, but anyone who thinks it's any higher than that, they're going to have to explain why to me. Then the Hall of Famers came out afterwards. Let's see, who do we have for this year? The ones I really cared about were the British Bulldog, because we got his son coming out, and I really hope he makes it back in the WWE here pretty soon. I heard that was the word, but he's also been doing a lot with Josh Barnett's Bloodsport lately. So who knows where he's going? He was awesome in Killer Elite Squad with Lance Archer in New Japan. Hopefully, he comes back. It just sucks that Tyson Kidd can't wrestle anymore, unless, who knows, maybe he's going to try to make a comeback as well. But I don't know. But he, I mean, he's a good big guy. He's a good hand. I could see him definitely getting a run with, you know, an Intercontinental or United States title, probably the Intercontinental, just to be like his dad. Kane was one I was really happy to see as well. I thought that was, you know, very well deserved for him to be the head of a class. He had an amazing career, part of the best storyline ever with him and The Undertaker. Congrats to those two for sure. And then, you know, you got the Bellas, like, whatever, you know. My wife loves the Bellas, but I really just don't care about them anymore. I just want them off of my TV. But then, you know, they let them pretty much bitch slap Bailey and throw her down the damn ramp with the promo with Hogan and Titus at the end, and that just ticks me off. What they're doing to Bailey, and maybe there's a reason for it, maybe there's not, maybe they just think it's funny. But yeah, so yeah, we had Bellas. Gosh, who else did we have? Molly Holly was fantastic. Had a good speech. Let's see, I did Davey Boy. There was that Warrior Award dude recipient. You know, whatever. In my mind, I just want to see wrestlers, like actual wrestlers in the hall. I'm actually pretty tired of this celebrity crap, like William Shatner, like who cares? And then Jushin Thunder Liger, I want to say, was the other one for this year. I can't remember 100% because I kind of tune out because I watched the Hall of Fame ceremony, but then I usually, you know, take the dogs out or something while they're introducing the Hall of Famers the next night, at WrestleMania. So, excuse me. Anyway, that's how I feel about that. From there, we went to the Raw Women's Championship match between Asuka and Rhea Ripley. These girls got a little bit under 14 minutes to go. Ripley, she was given the live performance, which, like I said before, as we all know, usually if you have a live performance of your song, you end up losing. But her entrance theme is fantastic, but the live performance was fucking awful. Anyway, the sound was just terrible for it. It just came off really poorly. But I'd say there was a little bit to like in this match. You know, Rhea and Asuka, you know, played their big hits. Rhea ended up essentially winning with the Riptide. And like I said, it was just under 14 minutes. Had its fun moments, but never really sniffed the greatness that was Charlotte and Rhea last year. I believe that was one of the best matches on the card of last year's Mania. But now with Rhea and Bianca representing NXT call-ups that have the titles now, you know, who knows? Maybe we finally start getting that wave of some of these NXT girls coming up. And NXT has the best by far women's division in the world. And I mean, I would put them against any women's division, no problem. So hopefully some of those girls start to come up and sniff the scene. You know, hopefully Io, but with Sarray or Sari, however you say her name, from Japan coming into NXT now. Who knows, they might want to do Kabuki Warriors 2.0. Who knows? Anyway, I'll give that match, I'll give it a solid 3 stars. It didn't do a whole lot for me, but I mean, it should have. It really should have, now that I really think about it. It's Asuka and Rhea Ripley. Damn it. That sucks, but you know what? You get what you get, I guess. As I mentioned before, afterwards, Titus and Hulk came back out because they wanted to pump up the crowd before the last match. Bailey came out and pretty much said she was sick of all the bullshit. And then the Bellas came out and pretty much buried her. And fucked the Bellas, in my mind. Again, my wife's going to hate me for saying that because she loves all their shows. But seriously, fuck the Bellas. Get them off my TV. They're done. And again, Bailey needs more. So prayers to you, Bailey. Okay, the last match on this card was the big one. Roman Reigns versus Daniel Bryan versus Edge for the Universal Championship. And let me just say, the fact we are getting to see these three guys, or that we got to see these three guys in a WrestleMania main event, is fucking wild. Two of them were retired not too long ago. And, you know, and neither of them thought they'd ever wrestle again. And then you have Roman Reigns, who, I mean, thank God he beat leukemia, but like, holy smokes. These three guys being in the main event, holy smokes. And then, of course, main event Jay's with Roman, with Paul Heyman as well. And, of course, he got involved into the match at the very start. And also later on, gotta say, Edge looked fantastic in this match. I had my doubts on how he would look. And, damn, he looked amazing in this match. Daniel Bryan, I feel like, didn't really get to play his hits too much. I did love the double submission on Reigns, where they were telling him, or him and Edge were yelling, "Let go," or "Get off," like, at each other. I thought that was pretty fun. And then Edge, like we knew he was going to, he snapped and started in with the chair shots. Including giving a concerto to, I believe it was Daniel Bryan. Yeah, he gave it to Daniel Bryan, and then he was going to do one on Roman, and then main event Jay came back in. And I should say Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal winner, main event Jay Uso. He came in and went after Edge. Edge came back with a spear. Edge hit several spears in this match. I want to say three or four to different people. So then Roman got back up and did what Roman does. Laid out Edge. I believe he laid Edge out with a spear. And then he hit the concerto on Edge. Dragged Edge onto Daniel Bryan. And like a little, like if you blinked, you missed it. But both of their shoulders were actually down. And like a lot of people on DraftKings were bitching, saying that the guy in the middle couldn't technically be pinned. No, Roman Reigns made sure that Daniel Bryan and Edge's shoulders were down. That was a nice little touch. But he's still head of the table. They got 21 or a little under 22 minutes. Fantastic wrestling. It kept me engaged the whole time. It kept my wife engaged the whole time, which is very hard for her. If she loses interest, she'll really lose interest. But she was really into it. We were both pulling for Daniel Bryan, but I understand why Roman won. He has been killing it in his role. That match, 4.5 stars. Outstanding. It got the time that it needed. It did its job. It made Roman out to be a badass. It made Edge out to be a badass. My only gripe is that Daniel Bryan, I feel like, never really sniffed victory in the match. So that was the only thing. For the whole show, I will give this one a 7. Too much stuff dragged it down. But that main event, and I mean, let's give credit to both nights of WrestleMania. Both main events of both shows delivered and brought up the ratings. So, you know, good on the main event people, but bad on the writers and the bookers and whatever you want to say, because I feel like they really, really stuck it to us as fans. So, as before, I just got done with WrestleMania Night 2, and I am now 40 minutes into an hour-long time limit podcast. So, I mean, I just feel there's a lot to discuss during WrestleMania, and I definitely felt like I needed to touch on all the points I touched on. So I am going to end this episode, and then I'm going to come back with episode 1C, and we're going to talk about NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver Nights 1 and 2. I will get both of them into one podcast. And then I'll probably end up having to do a fourth one with a review of Raw and NXT, which should be no problem. Anyway, have a great day. If this is the last one you listen to today. And again, thank you for listening. And you all, I will see you next time on episode 1C.